Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. ebaymotors.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello there and welcome. It's Wednesday night here on Fightful.com, FightfulWrestling.com, YouTube.com/Fightful. Are you subscribed, by the way, to YouTube.com/Fightful? If you're not, fix that right now. Just click the subscribe button because then you get to see every week. It gets in your feed and you never forget to watch the Wednesday Night Wars podcast that we do every Wednesday, talking about NXT, talking about AEW Dynamite, with me, Mr. Warren Hayes, and also with two fantastic colleagues that I have here, one of them being a man who hangs out over on FightfulSelect.com, which, by the way, is a great place if you want to get all sorts of extra content from Fightful people. Excellent, top-notch, primo content. And it also supports everything that we do here on Fightful because it's a subscription service. So you get the free site, but then you get the paid stuff where you get all sorts of extra. Sean Ross Sapp does a weekly backstage report. You have Steven Jensen who does reports on non-WWE happenings during the week. And then, of course, you have Q&A sessions. You have extra content from the listening your boy. You have all sorts of stuff. And the crowning achievement, like the castle on top of Hill, Fightful Select is inhabited by the king of sourness himself, Alex Pawlowski, who reviews Raw and SmackDown, but on Wednesdays he's not very sour, he's very happy. How you doing, Alex, tonight?
Q&A episode, there is a something on the Fightful Select. You go there and you can ask a question and I will answer it. Big old Q&A episode, because I tried to do one last weekend, but my microphone cut out and I couldn't get it to work. So technology is my friend and yours, because now I get to do a full episode.
Now, there you go. And technology still wasn't your friend tonight, Alex, as people in the chat were advising me that your mic was muted. And that's your boy again. Hey, you know, at least we didn't start early this week, right? You know, hooray for small victories. As Anakin JMT left a super chat, thank you, Anakin, saying, no early start, sad face. Well, you know, those will happen. We got to keep them rare so that they'll stay special. And you know who else is special? Louis Dangour, who's over here hanging out with us over from Wrestle Talk. Anakin left us another super chat earlier, and he said, Warren, make sure to say this in your best Cena impression. Well, yeah, my Cena impression oddly sounds like Vince McMahon, but here he goes. Ladies and gentlemen, the Quizzlemania champ is here! That's right, Louis Dangour won at Quizzlemania today. Congratulations, Louis. How do you feel, champ?
Yeah, I feel good. I text Sean. I told him my booking fee has gone considerably higher since my win. Nearly didn't show up tonight. Just thought, you know what, I'm gonna skip it. But no, in all seriousness, it felt good to win, to prove I am the genius that I proclaim to be. So no, but I'm looking forward to chatting AW and NXT with you guys.
Well, there's a lot to talk about again tonight, folks. Thank you again for joining us. Consider giving the video a like, a thumbs up here on YouTube if you're watching right now. Share the link out. That stuff is always appreciated, and it's a really, really simple way to show your support for what we do here. It really, really helps out. Before we get into it, of course, we learned today that Joseph Laurinaitis, also known as Road Warrior Animal, passed away today at the age of 60 years old. Well, he passed away yesterday. We learned about it today. Apologies on that. Whether you've known him as the Road Warriors or the Legion of Doom, he was part of one of the most iconic tag teams in all of wrestling, dating all the way back to the 80s. They debuted back in 1983. He and Hawk, and became one of the most celebrated and much copied, but much imitated. But a lot of people tried to do the same, just couldn't quite get it done. This is a tag team that he won along with Hawk. AWA Tag Team Championships, and in the NWA as well, WWF. It's a sad day for anyone who is who grew up with the Legion of Doom or the Road Warriors, and all of our best wishes and condolences to his surviving family members. So who won tonight, fellas? AEW or NXT? That's always the question that we ask to start this off. Louis, what do you pick?
I'd probably say NXT. Based on what happened in the main event, I'd say NXT.
Alex?
NXT, sure. Yeah.
Well, there you go. NXT winning tonight. And just before we jump into it, Stephen Engblorn, yes. The R and the N together looks like an M, but I think it's Engblorn. Thank you very much. Says congrats to Nugget on winning Quizzlemania. Way to win despite botching the final question. Hashtag FTF. Nugget, huh?
So Adam, who runs the quiz, gave us all Retribution style crap names. So someone was Q-Tip. Mm-hmm. Someone was Splosion.
And yours was Nugget.
Someone was Point Blade or Pain Blade. Well,
look, all that matters, Louis, Nugget. Between you and I, all that matters is that yours was Nugget. We'll hang on to that one.
We still don't know who Mia Yim and Mercedes Martinez are. I'm hoping I'm holding out hope for Typhoid and Scoop Scoop.
All right, Alex, let's get going. We're going to start with the Women's Battle Royal to determine the number one contender for Io Shirai's NXT Women's Championship. Earlier today, before any of this started, Alex, Candice LeRae took out Tegan Nox. She attacked her legs, her knees, crushed them with a road case, took her out of the Battle Royal, essentially, Alex. You don't go around breaking the Gargano's television sets or pouring spaghetti sauce everywhere, clearly.
No, that was obviously certainly well-deserved. Candice LeRae entirely in the right. After you break somebody's television, anything that happens to you after that is perfectly legal. This was dastardly. Presents Candice as the definite heel, and her going on, spoiler alert, going on to win the Battle Royal then gets her two storylines coming out of that. One, facing Io Shirai for the title, and two, Tegan Nox's retribution. I should probably come up with a better word for that because that's been stained. Tegan Nox's justifiable payback coming toward Candice in the future.
So the match occurred. Of course, it was a battle royal. I'm not going to go through every detail because we could be here for a while. But the main talking points, I think, Alex, Rhea Ripley and Reyna Gonzalez. See what I almost did there, but I didn't. They had elimination streaks. Katie Cannizzaro landed on her ass and scooched her way back into the ring. Well, she had the Kofi near elimination spots, basically, right? And
it's stupid.
What's that?
It's very stupid.
Well, you know, it's sports entertainment. I was sports entertained by that. Those were the main talking points. Rhea and Reyna eliminate each other. Our final five are Indy Hartwell, Casey Catanzaro, Candice LeRae, and Shotzi Blackheart and Dakota Kai. Hartwell tries to toss Casey Catanzaro but gets Rhonda to the floor. Candice and Dakota Kai team up to eliminate Catanzaro. Shotzi dodges a kick from Dakota Kai and she gets thrown out. So our final two are Candice and Shotzi. And they end up on the stairs. Candice leg presses Shotzi off the stairs to the floor. We're getting Io versus Candice. It's not a fresh match, but it's a match I'm looking forward to see, Alex.
Well, it's a match with the roles reversed, which is always interesting. Because when they fought before, they had that amazing match takeover. It was Candice firmly as the babyface, and Io as the dastardly heel who had turned on her best friend. The match was actually a lot of fun. There were a lot of people in it that I had never seen before. Like, I'm pretty sure we're making their debut on TV. And I was like, I don't mean to quibble, but technically, should these women even be in a number one contenders battle royal if I've never seen them on television before? Like, can't we keep it to people who have, you know, wins under their belt on television before they're actually in a, just to dispense with all the kayfabe BS. Speaking of kayfabe BS, I am fine. You get tossed out and one foot lands on the floor, but the other one doesn't. I'm cool. No problems here. You want to walk around on your hands. That's a little more egregious, but I'll allow it. If your entire back lands on the ground, you're out. I'm sorry. You're out. That's stupid.
It's two feet on the floor, Alex. They remind us this at every Royal Rumble season. Alex, are you telling me that when Royal Rumble season is going to come up, WWE is going to have to re-explain the rules of the Battle Royal for you? Because clearly they're not coming across here. They're going to have to throw people over the top rope to show us, you know, just to make sure that we get the rules.
You jump to the barricade, cool. You're on the steps, fine. You land on somebody else and use them to walk around, okay. Your entire back is landing on the... You're out. You just are. Everybody knows you're out. It's like... They just have to come up with more and more unforgivably egregious ways to get around. The one rule is both feet have to touch at the same time. I'm done. You can't do this anymore. It's ridiculous. Now, I love the storyline they're leading to it because Rhea Ripley and Reyna Gonzalez they need to have their match. Do it at TakeOver. I'm fine with that. Just them for 8.5 minutes punching the bejesus out of each other's faces. Just do that and I'll be fine. We get Dakota Kai versus Shotzi in a match that has a lot of potential next week. That's cool. And Candice LeRae versus Io is the match coming out of this. That's cool. Plus, as we said, Candice and Tegan is going to be a fire match down the line as well. All of the good things were packaged here. We get good storylines coming out of it. This is what a battle royal should be. It should give you no less then three storylines coming out, depending on who eliminates who. I'm totally fine with this. This is good.
Remember, folks, to leave us a super chat. I don't think I mentioned it, but a lot of you already know the routine. If you want your question or comment read live on the air, I will do that. I've already started, but you know, I just wanted to underscore that you can leave us a super chat and I will gladly do it, such as Evan Wright, who left a super chat, because I think, Alex, you opened up a Pandora's box here. He says, Alex...
No, I'm consistent here.
Alex, what if you land on a plate of pancakes?
You're out.
Anakin GMT left us a super chat as well. Thank you very much. He says, Alex, Kofi landed on the ground, but his feet were on the steps and he wasn't out.
I was on record at the time. He should have been out.
You can go look it up. Go look it up.
not okay. Not okay with it. Just across the board. I'm, yeah.
Nope.
I've been pretty clear.
We have a promo backstage with Damian Priest, who's going to be fighting Johnny Gargano at TakeOver for the North American title, and he's facing Austin Theory tonight. He says Theory is going to slide, and he kind of hits on Zara Schreiber, I think. But a little later on, we get Austin Theory, who counters his promo, saying that, you know, he's not sliding, whatever. But Johnny Gargano pops in frame.
How can he be sliding? He's doing bicep curls while doing a promo. Like, how could he be sliding?
He's always all day, right? All day. Johnny Gargano comes in and he gives him some advice, and he hopes that he will soften Damian Priest up. The match happens a little later on, but since we're talking about it right now, Alex, let's talk about Damian Priest versus Austin Theory. Priest actually defeated Austin Theory tonight. Priest starts off with a lariat and a standing moonsault. Priest wriggles out of a fireman's carry and hits Theory with a flatliner. There, he follows in with some strikes. He does a throwing falcon arrow on Theory as well. Theory ducks a cyclone kick and hits a blue thunder bomb. They go onto the floor. Priest hits the cyclone kick this time, and a razor's edge on the apron gets Theory back in the ring and hits the reckoning for the pin. After the match, as Priest is celebrating, Johnny Gargano blindsides him with a super kick. What did you think of all of this, Alex?
Okay. Austin Theory got destroyed by two men. Two different matches, back-to-back weeks. He oversold for Bronson Reed, like really, really made it look like he was getting the absolute piss beaten out of him. And then Kushida took Righteous Fury against Austin Theory with his new gimmick that I talked about last week. Austin Theory reward for just looking like he's brutalized 2 weeks in a row is to get a match versus the North American champion. I mean, it wasn't a title match, but that's more exposure than he deserves. And he looked so bad against Bronson Reed and Kushida that him looking good against Damian Priest doesn't make Austin Theory look good. It makes Priest look bad. That was a weird decision. It was like you were in the doghouse for 2 weeks, kid, Austin Theory, but now we're going to let you look good against Priest. But like that's what it reads to me, because he was booked so horribly in those two matches versus Reed and Kushida that him looking good in this match doesn't make any sense, unless you're trying to tell me that Priest isn't as good as Kushida and Bronson Reed, which, fair play, I might agree with you there, but that's not what you should be booking your champion as. Also, they really messed up by having Gargano be announced out of the blue as Priest's opponent for TakeOver, when you could have announced it during the broadcast tonight after he sucker attacked Damian Priest because he wants a title match. And Priest says, you want your title match? You got it. And that's how you announce it. Because before, if you announced the thing earlier in the day like they did, and when Johnny Gargano comes up to Austin Theory and says, hey, you should, you know, try and soften him up for me. Like, it telegraphs the post-match attack, which is never good. You want those to be a genuine surprise. If we had heard nothing from Johnny Gargano, not about him being the new contender or him talking to Theory before the match, and he attacked Priest out of nowhere, that's much better because it's a genuine surprise and makes us want to see that match that hasn't been announced yet. Then they announce it and we're interested. When they announced Gargano out of the blue for no reason as the next contender, I was like, okay, I guess. But if it had come after this surprise attack, I might have been excited for it. Also, no interest in next week's Candice and Johnny versus Io and Priest match. Mixed tag matches in WWE are terrible. Oh, you tagged my partner in, so I guess I better tag out. Like,
well, just to,
I don't need
to just to make sure that everyone knows what we're talking about. A little later on in the evening, Io Shirai is having an interview backstage, she's talking about her TakeOver challenger in Japanese, but she denies she was ever friends with Candice. The Garganos come in with Johnny saying that he doesn't know what she said, but he doesn't like it. And I kind of like this, you know, this snide little Johnny Gargano. And Damian Priest comes in. He's pissed off. Everyone starts to fight. So, yeah, that's going to lead to a mixed match. Mixed match challenge.
Intergender match.
But it's not really intergender because the women and men don't fight each other. That's the thing.
Mixed gender.
So,
Mixed match challenge match.
Aaron Entertainment. Well, actually, Evan Wright first left us a super chat. Thank you very much, Evan. Says, why is this North American title match happening again? Also, Damian Priest isn't doing it for me. Doesn't deserve Io as a tag partner next week. Thank you for that, Evan. Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure that Karrion Kross being taken out through and Keith Lee being called up really soon probably threw a wrench in a couple of plans, wouldn't you say, Louis?
Yeah, and obviously there were reports, I think Sean reported and John Alba reported that there was a couple of positive COVID tests in NXT. Obviously, we don't want to speculate who they were, but I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest if they led to a lot of... I think it's even been reported there was a lot of creative changes as a result. I think Dave Meltzer said it on Twitter today. So whether the card at TakeOver and even the card tonight is the one that we would have got if everyone was available, hopefully he wouldn't have been called up, but Keith, he wouldn't have been called up, and Killer Cross wouldn't have been injured. I very much doubt that this is exactly what NXT had planned for this upcoming takeover.
Aaron Entertainment left us a super chat. Thank you very much, Aaron Entertainment. He asks, are we starting to see too many takeovers? That's a very interesting question. Alex, you want to field this one?
I mean, there used to be only four a mm-hmm. year, right? Like, basically, and they would have a lot of buildup over the course of several weeks. 1 hour a show every Wednesday to build it up. And so it felt like it was really building to something. They were allowed to take their time, really build these feuds. They'd have like feuds that would build, and then they'd pay off on a regular show, and then the next feud would come in after that and build with the takeover. Now it does feel like they're having one every 6 weeks. And it feels like it may be too much, if only because we're seeing things like, well, we don't really have time to build a real challenger for Damian Priest, so Johnny Gargano gets a title match because it's Johnny Gargano, as opposed to actually doing something to build it over the course of several weeks. But that's what they do. I don't like saying this every week. It's becoming Wednesday Night mm-hmm. Raw. Like, that's what they do on the main roster, where they just like say, hey, you get a title shot out of nowhere because we said so. Or we know we said there's no more automatic rematches, but automatic rematch. I mean, like, there's just weird things like that. And you, I think that the answer is yes. We're starting to see too many. I don't know if this is a thing that they're doing only because it's COVID right now and they're not being able to do it at the bigger arenas or whatever. But it's starting to look like that to
me. The Lion Drive left us a super chat. Thank you very much. And he posits this thought. I feel this year NXT has had to fill event gaps with NXT UK shutting down and no Saudi shows. Maybe, but I mean, they're not making Saudi money running NXT takeover.
I think the biggest thing is AEW, regardless of Saudi or NXT UK. A lot of the decisions that NXT has made with regards to the Great American Bash shows that ran alongside Fighter Fest, a lot of it is all based around what AEW is doing and counter programming that. I'm sure even this takeover is to try and boost the numbers, because they normally get a little bit of a boost around takeovers. So I think that the majority of it is the changes that would have been made to NXT programming have been brought on by just the fact that they're going up against AEW.
William Regal joins Fandango, who is dressed as Sherlock Holmes. And he's trying to make a tag team situation. He's trying to create a match in the greatest British accent ever. I think, you know, all of our British friends here on the panel will agree that it was cordon bleu. And here I am using French expressions to talk about British ones. But basically, we're setting up some tag team matches during the evening where you have Danny Burch and Roderick Strong on one team, and Raul Mendoza and Fabian Aichner on the other. The winning team, will then face each other in a singles match, and the winner of that singles match will then have their tag team fight for the NXT Tag Team Championships at TakeOver. Is this our new Dusty Classic?
this is a great way of getting around possible, maybe not, COVID diagnoses. I don't want to say anything, but I'm just saying. Because very conspicuous in their absences are half of all the tag teams, including Tyler Breeze, missing. But I love that Fandango explains it, and it's a blink and you miss it thing. His whiteboard has all their names, but wrong. Like, he spells Danny Burch wrong. He calls him Uno Lorcan, Billy Fish, Robert Strong. My favorite two, though, are there's also Marty Barty, which is good, and Fabio Acne. And Quinoa Wild is up there. Quinoa Wild is fantastic. and again, if you don't actually freeze this thing at the right moment, you'll miss it. But my favorite part of all of this is him trying to explain it to Regal, who has no idea what he's talking about. And he turns and looks to Danny Burch, who uses Cockney rhyming slang to explain it to Regal. He's like, oh, quite right. And that's it. And I thought, that's great. Can we get Danny Burch as a guy who translates things for Regal in Cockney rhyming slang over and over again? He referred to Eichner as the Sherman, which of course means German, but he's not. He's Italian. He's just got a German last name. I love all of this. It's comedy gold. It's accidental comedy gold.
Tommaso Ciampa beat the hell out of Jake Atlas again this week. They go at each other, and early on, Atlas is in control until Ciampa just lariats his head off. Let's just call it what it was. Atlas hits a pump knee right in Ciampa's face, goes up top, but Ciampa just, you know, strolls away. He eats a kick, but then Ciampa eats a moonsault to the floor. Back in the ring, Ciampa hits the Willow's Bell, goes for the cover, interrupts the pin himself, and to deliver a spinning fairy tale ending. I like this, Alex. I'm all for Tommaso Ciampa being back as a full-blown heel. I think we deserve that as wrestling fans. And I am all for him coming in and smashing fools. I'm completely okay with this situation. Give me your thoughts.
Yes. Yeah, I'm totally fine with it too. He also is like, they're not giving him a lot of mic time right now, but if he ever gets to cut another Daddy's Home type promo in front of the Full Sail crowd, there's a lot there that he's got to be angry about. Like, I still haven't gotten my real fair shake at getting back the title that I gave up willingly when I got hurt, and that pisses me off. You know what I mean? Like all that stuff. The stuff with Johnny getting ending because his damn wife hit me in the nuts, and that's how that happens, that I have to go up against this maniac Karrion Kross, and everybody forgot about me. Oh, bye-bye, Ciampa. We didn't miss you at all. No. Daddy's home, and he's done playing nice. I think that there's a really great way for him to be justified in all of his anger. Also, wrecking fools. There's a lot of people in that lower tier of NXT that can get wrecked and then move on from it later.
Sure.
Bronson Reed was in that lower tier like 6 months ago, where I was like, you know what? If they give that guy an actual push, there could be something there. And then they did. And now he's in a fatal five-way or whatever, how gauntlet eliminator match, to become number one contender for the title. And there was a point in there where I was like, we might actually see it. And it wouldn't shock me. So, like, there's things like Jake Atlas with a little bit more seasoning and a push behind him in 6 months could be cruiserweight champion or whatever. So there's no reason to think that the guys are being buried by being destroyed by an angry Tommaso Ciampa. I think this is all very good.
I think it's very good as well. Next, we have a Ridge Holland promo, or at least a vignette. And again, this match happens a little later on, but let's just ease on into it. Ridge Holland defeated Antonio De Lucia. If you didn't write down the name, there was no way you would have remembered it, because that guy just got destroyed. Over the overhead belly to belly, headbutts in the corner, Northern Grit. Alex, Ridge Holland just ain't doing it for me.
No. Well, they're not doing anything it's with not, it. You know what I
but
mean?
But they're like, pushing him as a big deal. Like, they're giving them the vignettes. Well, they're doing it. Hey, I was a rugby guy. I like to hurt people. I want to keep hurting people, but, like, get paid for actually hurting people. And I'm not getting it.
That's something they could play on. Like, I want to get paid for hurting people. So if you have the right guy being a champion, like, literally passing this dude envelopes to take out their next challenger, I think that's a really cool thing for Ridge Holland being a one-man APA. Like, where he just sits backstage, and instead of smoking cigars and playing poker, he's like, what do they do, eat fish and chips? Like, whatever it is you do in Britain.
Whoa.
You
know what I mean?
I'm sorry, was that offensive? I didn't mean to be xenophobic. I'm just saying, I'm just saying, whatever it is that you want to make him be, you know, British. Maybe he's eating crisps. I don't know what it is that you guys do over there. But, I think that'd be really cool. Like, you could do something with him. Right now, I'm not sold on him because he wears a flat cap and a trench coat and carries around a big black dildo. I'm not sold on him as just that. You need to do something else with him beyond that. But he certainly is intimidating looking enough and can toss people around with great abandon in the ring. You know, like, let's see what they do with it after this point.
Evan Wright left us a super chat. Says, Ridge Holland, more like Fridge Holland, cold AF.
He is cold AF.
Let's go through a few more. Excuse me. That really made me laugh. Let's go through a couple of super chats here. Circling back to Fandango here, Evan Wright had left us another super chat. Thank you again, Evan. Says, straight out of BTE type skit, and I loved it. Yeah, it did have like that very vlog style of that they use on BTE. And you know what? Sometimes WWE can benefit from not having always over polished, over produced segments.
That's very true.
They could do they could make with a little grittier things, and it would probably help stuff.
It like was it. Just funny. And but the majority of times, the charity do comedy, it doesn't work because it's not funny.
Mm-hmm.
But this was genuinely funny, and it wasn't in your face funny. Where, like Alex said, with the names, if that was on the main roster, they'd be calling the names would be drilled into you 50 times a second.
Right.
Like, oh, look at this! Look at this! Look at this!
But did you see Fandango's whiteboard? Oh my god! Yeah, they're gonna make sure and they point
that
it out.
That said,
he said quinoa.
It's rare I'm gonna stick up for them, but the sight gags that they had when they were doing the fashion police. And they were sight gags. The commentary didn't drive them home. You had to be paying attention.
No, they did not. That to their credit, that was also a different era of SmackDown.
Yes, that's very true.
And Breezango was by far the best thing about that time.
Absolutely. In my
opinion. That should have been a network series or a YouTube series.
It really should have been. Oh, my God, it really should have been.
Missed opportunity. But, you know, I guess they tried to get that brass ring, guys. They just tried. Yeah. Tay Boogie left us a super chat. Thank you very much. Talking a bit more, some more about the takeover, the fact that there are a lot of takeovers. He says, Tampa was pushed back, made takeovers seem like they're happening back to back. We're not on pace for 5, so it's not really much of a difference. And JJ Lee left us another super chat as well in that regard. Thank you, JJ Lee. Saying 5 takeovers this year, 1 Worlds Collide also. So
I will say that you are correct that there are not a crazy amount. It does feel like they've been very quick succession because they're making up for lost time. So I'm fine with it if they want to stick around 5 or 6 a year. You know what I mean? And that if they're spread out equally, as opposed to what it feels like now, which is like every month a takeover, which is not what we need because you done took over. If you're doing it every month, you don't need to take anything over. You're already there.
Anakin GMT left us a super chat as well. Thank you again, Anakin, for the super chat. He asks, Louis, what do you eat in the UK if not fish and chips?
We do eat fish and chips, to be fair. It was a very fair representation on Alex's behalf.
So we do get the match between Roderick Strong and Danny Burch versus Fabian Aichner and Raul Mendoza. Started up fast. I thought the match had a really good pace. Burch was beating the hell out of Mendoza, who finally drags him off the second rope. And then the heels are able to take over, and Burch is your babyface in peril for this match. There's some good chemistry on the heel side during this match. Strong gets a hot tag, hits an Olympic slam, but walks into a spine buster by Aichner. And I will say it every time I see it, Fabian Aichner has a hell of a spine buster.
We'll talk about one of those later.
Yes, we shall. Strong.
Hold that thought.
Oh, for sure. Strong gets some knee strikes in. Burch cutters Mendoza off the turnbuckle and covers him for the win. Fast match. I thought the action was solid here. Not much to complain about. These are all people that I like that was in this ring, and they all delivered. Alex, what were your thoughts?
And I really enjoyed the weird stakes to it. Like, you want to team up with the guy. You want to help the guy you're teaming with now, so later you can kick his ass so you can get a tag team title shot. I think that's really interesting. Like, it's cool that, like, again, sometimes WWE comes up with the most creative shit when their backs are against the wall. So if literally everybody's missing a partner because they're sick with some disease, but we're not going to talk about that, then you could do this, which is totally interesting. And I actually really liked the way that Strong and Burch played off each other. There was a while there when Burch was in the ring fighting Aichner, and they're both wearing black trunks. They're both bald white men around the same height. It took me a second to figure out who was hitting who. It did feel like it was like some weird like B movie where they were about clones, where they can't afford to hire twins. They hired two guys who look kind of alike. This was fun. This is one of the times I've really missed it, Nigel McGuinness, because he loved calling Danny Burch matches. He knew all these like terms for, like, specifically British style, like Strong style terms for these things he would do. And the cutter off the top rope is called the Tower of London, apparently. And when Nigel McGuinness calls it, he can't not call it Tower of London. Like, he has to call it like in that crazy. And I thought when he did it, I was like, oh, I miss Nigel. I thought this was all really good, and I'm totally down for a Danny Burch versus Roderick Strong title match, considering, again, all of these implications that can happen at TakeOver with the UE and one particular guy being left out is very interesting to me.
JJ Lee left us a super chat. Thank you very much. Says, glad there was no infighting with Strong and Burch. Be professional to get to the match next week. I mean, that's what we want, Alex and Louis, right? That's what we want. We want stakes that make sense, and then that the wrestlers act like the stakes are important. Right. That's all we want.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a collective goal. So working together makes sense. It's like, hey, let's work together so we can win this match. Totally makes sense. I hate that infighting when you've got a common purpose.
Absolutely, I agree.
I'm giving Evan a free one here. Evan, right on in the chat, lets me know Tower of London was Nigel's finisher when he wrestled. So that's why he's the energy is so good when he sees somebody else hit a good Tower of London on somebody. That's awesome. I did not realize that. Mea culpa for not knowing that was Nigel's finisher. That's amazing that he carries that through when he calls matches too.
Evan Wright left us a super chat again. Thank you very much, Evan. Says, it gives me big Bucks versus Jurassic Express vibes. Work together to get a pay-per-view payday / work together to get a title match. Execution was fine. Yeah, we saw that recently. And that it just makes matches come together. Sometimes you don't need complicated, convoluted storylines to make something happen. Alex, there was a robot voice and someone walking around with some night vision goggles saying that something is coming back on October 4. What the hell is going on? Is Retribution getting high tech now? What's happening?
I don't know. Somebody was like, you know, who do you think is coming back? And I said, well, just from the font alone, I would guess Neo from the Matrix? Like, I don't know.
Making his NXT return?
Possibly. I mean, did he ever really leave? I mean, who knows? We're all in a simulation right now.
I think it'd be hilarious if it was Bo Dallas who came back, who suddenly like has this, you know, who found the gear in Bray's swamp dive, you know, all this militia gear that he's like, hey, gonna go mess some stuff up.
I like it.
We also got an Isaiah Swerve Scott segment calling out Santos Escobar. Cool beans. But let's talk about the main event. The Gauntlet Eliminator started off with Kyle O'Reilly and Kushida giving us wrestling nerds some throwbacks to their 2016 Best of Super Juniors match. They trade some submission attempts at first, some mat wrestling tying each other up. This was par for the course. This is something we all wanted to see, and it was good. And then Bronson Reed comes in. They start going strong style on each other as Bronson Reed comes in. He tries to double Samoan drop the guys, but instead he eats a double. They, being Kyle O'Reilly and Reed, they eat a double springboard elbow by Kushida. There's a lot of shenanigans that happen as Kyle O'Reilly and Kushida try to knock Bronson Reed off the top rope. The ref is distracted, and guess who pops in? Velveteen Dream with a death Dream Valley driver. Excuse me. Must preserve the branding since he's still around. That allows Bronson Reed to hit the big splash on Kushida and pin our boy Kushida, who was taken out within the first 4 minutes of this match, Alexander.
Yeah. I'm not particularly pleased. I mean, it furthers the storyline. It's Dream versus Kushida. Probably going to get that match to take over. The only possible way that works is if Kushida wins. So at least we're going to get that eventually. And hopefully we'll get a Kushida title run at some point. Can we please at some point? I'm not asking for too much, am I?
Please? I don't think so.
Guys, Kushida could be on pay-per-view. This hasn't happened.
This is a blessing.
He's been with NXT for 18 months.
It's true.
Let's take the wins where we can. Sorry, not even on takeover. He's in a feud.
Yeah, this is true.
He hasn't had that in 18 months. One of the best wrestlers in the world. It's staggering they've done nothing with him. But I'm just excited to see him in a feud with something to bite his teeth into.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there are some people who do feel deflated about it. The Line Drive left us a super chat. Thank you very much for the super chat, Line Drive. It says that Dream in NXT is literally a walking wet fart in an elevator. Everything he touches, he kills the mood. There is no value in him. Given the detailed accusations, it's killing NXT by insisting on it. And Evan Wright left us a super chat as well. Thank you, Evan, along the same lines, saying, Dream interfering took the air out of my sails, man. I mean, that's it, right? I mean, and you have to wonder, with the great numbers NXT has been doing on ratings these days, you have to wonder just how many people aren't aware of what's going on as opposed to those who are.
I would say the vast majority of people who watch NXT, even regularly, have no clue. Because, like, we think everyone's on social media, everyone's reading the dirt sheets, they're not. So people don't know. And a lot of people are like if you watched Velveteen Dream before all this stuff became public, and you were a huge fan of his, as a lot of people were, and you still are ignorant of that stuff coming to light, you're still a huge fan of his. You know, like, why wouldn't you be? What has changed? Other than he's a heel now, but then you love to root against him. Like, I don't know. Like, it's, yeah.
We are in such a niche bubble, and I think sometimes we do forget that we are very much the minority. The vocal minority, but the minority in these things, where a lot of people just don't know. And as Alex said, we have just seen Velveteen Dream, a character who, let's be honest, was once very over. People touting as, oh, he should go to the main roster. He was incredibly over. So people that don't know that will just be watching thinking, yeah, great, let's see Velveteen Dream back on TV.
Yep.
Thatcher comes in next and gets most of his initial offense during the commercial. Then we have Cameron Grimes who comes in, starts moonsaulting anywhere, everywhere. There's a lot of great stuff here that happens during this match. I thought it was a lot of fun. I particularly enjoyed, Alex, how they're really building Bronson Reed as a monster, because everyone gangs up on him. They don't seem to be able to take him down by themselves, and he dominated right up until his elimination. He was just manhandling everyone. He was in control.
Yeah, they listen when they gave him his own like Tron, where he's like walking through downtown Tokyo, stepping on buildings and stuff. Like, he's now the colossal Bronson Reed. They have plans for him. Like, they know what they have in him. They're going to use him. He's not getting a little minor push. They know what they've got in him. They're going to do a lot of things with him. I still can't get over that move where he's going to do like a scorpion death drop to somebody, but somebody attacks him. So he just uranagis that second guy through the first guy. Like, that's so impressive, because he doesn't get to use his hips at all. It's all like right shoulder, and that's all he gets to use. I think it's really cool. I really like him too. I also love that, like, the way he lost was he face planted doing his own splash, and then Kyle O'Reilly just landed with a knee in his spine, mm-hmm. and so he doesn't have like all of his back muscles are seizing up. He can't kick out. He's actually trying to, but he can't get any force behind it because of his back spasming. I think that's a really cool way for him to...
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
To go out in that way. Also, he's selling it on Twitter with a video of the famous thing where, like, somebody asked Mike Tyson, we heard you were hurt. Yeah, I broke my back. My back is broken. It's spinal. Like, he's using that as a way to communicate that he's very, very much in pain right now. And I like that.
The match comes to an end basically when Cameron Grimes hits the cave-in on Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle O'Reilly puts his foot on the rope, but Grimes, being the perfect goof that he is, thinks he won, and it allows Kyle O'Reilly to slap on a heel hook, and he wins. He is our number one contender for the NXT Championship. The Undisputed Era come out to celebrate, which is fantastic, and Kyle O'Reilly just looks surprised and thrilled and in awe, and Finn Balor comes out. JJ Lee left us a super chat. Thank you very much, JJ Lee. Says, I dig the use of Undisputed Era right now, like the Horsemen. Together, but can do their own things, keeping them fresh, in my opinion. I think that's a very good way of seeing it. It makes absolute sense to me. And I am so bad. I apologize. Jaminicito Gomez. Thank you for that. Thank you for the super chat. Left a super chat. Thank you very much. Says, Kyle beats Finn. Yui breaks up like Evolution. I doubt it, but can Kyle, being NXT champ, be a thing? I think it can be a thing. I do believe so, because he's a fantastic wrestler. But even before that, Alex, we were talking about it a bit before coming on air. The right man won, and we're getting the most interesting match I think that NXT can deliver for wrestling fans right now.
Right now, yes. I certainly would not have objected to a Kushida versus Finn Balor match. Yeah. We haven't seen Cameron Grimes since he lost in that ladder match for the vacant North American title. Even that seems like a long time ago to have never actually seen him at all on TV, and then he gets put in this title match, number one contenders match for the top title. Also, as much as I love the guy, Timothy Thatcher lost a North American title match last week. He lost to Finn at TakeOver, and he's in this match again to get a shot at Finn for the world title, for the NXT title at a TakeOver as well. Like, I love Timothy Thatcher, but in kayfabe, the way that you've actually booked him, it does not make sense for him to be in this position, because you shouldn't have booked him that way. I've said so many times he should be winning matches, but he's been losing matches, putting him in this place. The only guy to come out of this that made real sense was Kyle O'Reilly, which is crazy to say, since, like, it's kind of out of the blue. Kyle O'Reilly has been a tag guy his entire time in NXT. I love him. I think he's an amazing wrestler. He's a great singles wrestler, but we've only ever seen him as a tag guy. So there's an amazing opportunity here. If Roderick Strong beats Danny Burch next week, and we get Strong and Fish versus Breezango at TakeOver, and we get Kyle O'Reilly versus Finn Balor at TakeOver, we have one odd man out, who's the leader of the UE, who's a former champion for, 500 days or whatever the hell it was. And there's lots of implications there should one or both acts become champion and Adam Cole not being. Like, is there jealousy there? Like, is he going to ruin it for Kyle O'Reilly if Kyle O'Reilly's close to it? There's a lot of intrigue surrounding the UE, because a lot of things go different ways. Personally, after Adam Cole lost to Finn, whenever that was, Finn became champion, I thought with that babyface promo he cut afterwards, he was headed out. Him showing up at the end of the night surprised me. I thought he was basically gone. So there's a lot more stuff that they can do with him. There's a lot more intrigue surrounding the UE than I think that any of us thought possible, but I'm definitely here for it. But so, by the way, that Finn Balor versus Kyle O'Reilly match is going to kick so much ass.
You know what the best thing is, and I don't think we've touched on it, is obviously Adam Cole lost to Finn. So is he going to want Kyle to beat Finn?
Right.
Because then he's basically kind of proving... Yep. Kyle's better than him, and I think having a Undisputed Era member being the first one to challenge Finn is so, like, totally the right idea. And this, honestly, I don't think I could have picked anyone better, and I probably wouldn't have, because it wouldn't have come to mind, Kyle O'Reilly, if you said to me who should Finn's first opponent be. So the thought of that is just fantastic, and I'm really, really excited to see their takeover match.
Evan Wright left us a super chat. Thank you again, Evan. Says, thought this was good. No Aztec warfare, though. It's a good comparison, but yeah, I know exactly what you mean. But it was a good match. I liked it. Anakin left us a super chat as well. Thank you, Anakin. He says, I wonder what would happen if the big Full Sail NXT fans like Izzy, as an example, were to speak out against Dream being pushed.
I don't know. I mean, it's
they're not part of the system to begin with, So WWE, I don't know how much impact that kind of thing would have. I'll just leave it to your thought, Alex. But I mean, right now, fans are very, very vocal, whether they're big or small, in regards to Dream and his shenanigans. So I don't know what would be the value added there. But go ahead, Alex.
It's WWE. So the answer is no impact. It would have no impact whatsoever.
So that was NXT. We're going to move on to AEW. Just before we do, Keith Palmer left us a super chat. Thank you very much. Says, Nugget, did you get your KFC?
No. So here is another. I have never had either a KFC or a Burger King.
Or a what?
Or a Burger King. Do you guys know?
Burger King. Okay.
Burger King, yes. Burger
okay.
King.
Well, we don't call it Burger King. We just call it Burger King, but yeah, it's all right.
So I said this to Adam on the show, and he was not very happy with me. So he said, I need to order a KFC, but I didn't get one today. No.
That's okay. You're not missing much. Anakin left us a super chat, though. He says, hey, speaking about your newfound nickname, he says, Owen Hart was a Nugget, right? So that's something to look up to, Louis. Don't worry about it. Evan Wright left us a super chat as well. Thank you again. He says that congrats on the W, Louis. Love the weekend show, Alex, and the Raw review might be your best work to date. Warren, you're all right, I guess. I try. AEW was good, so let's go ahead and start talking about it. And folks, you can keep leaving us your super chats. We are going to continue reading them on the air. And Anakin left us another super chat. Thank you again, Anakin. He says, who won, NXT, AEW Tonight, or AEW last night? Because AEW had a killer edition of Dark. I highly suggest you check it out, if only for the match between Ben Carter and Lee Johnson, which was remarkably good. And of course, they had the late night Dynamite, which happened after the NBA, where we had Scorpio Sky defeat said Ben Carter in a very good match. Anna Jay submitted Brandy as well, and Sean Spears defeated Matt Sydal. So there was some stuff happening on that end tonight. But the first match that we got tonight was Sunny Kiss and Joey Janela versus Kip Sabian and the best man, Miro. Now, to start this one off, Janela cuts a promo at first, telling Kip that he's about to make a mistake marrying Ford. You know, they used to date. And he says that he and Sunny are on the express to victory. And if, unless you've been you haven't been following social media these days, that was a clear jab at one Jim Cornette. But we have the match here. Look, I'm not going to spend too much time on it, Louis. I'm going to go straight for your thoughts. And the reason why is that I thought this was really, really sloppy work from pretty much everyone involved. A rare miss from an opening tag team match on Dynamite, yeah, which is usually Dynamite, for lack of a thesaurus handy. It was absolutely, it was a mess. It was a mess. I thought it was sloppy. Miro missed a couple of spots. Everyone was off their game tonight.
It wasn't good. And more than that, the in-reaction wasn't great, but that happens. People can be off their game, whatever. The big thing for me was it just didn't do a lot for Miro. The match was long.
Oh, we just lost your audio.
Uh-oh.
Louis. And it's not me. I'm not touching anything.
It said Alex muted me.
I didn't mean to do that.
Was I?
Can I unmute you?
Well, we can hear you now. You're okay. No, we can't hear you.
Can I unmute? You can hear me now.
I can hear
Everything's
you.
Everything's okay. Let's keep going.
Sorry about that. Clicked the wrong thing.
Yeah, it just says a lot about, for me, how AEW books or thinks about Miro. So when he came in, I was a bit like, not a great debut. Like it's fine, but Kip's been a mid-carder for so long, but not even a mid-carder, a lower mid-carder for so long, that bringing him into to team with Miro, I wasn't sure how the dynamic would work. And this for me just didn't work at all. I think this should have been a singles match with Joey, Janela, and Miro, and had just Miro kill him, basically. Mm-hmm. I think that would have been far more beneficial for both parties. Janela's great at that. He's fantastic in that role of just being like, hey, I bump a lot. I'm a great seller. Please just murder me. And he makes it look good. So I think that would work well. For me, I know they're trying to establish his tag team, but the tag division is so stacked that I can't see them being a top team in the division, and Miro deserves to be part of a top team. So I'd have him do some single stuff. This wasn't great. And for me, it just didn't achieve what it needed to achieve.
Eddie Kingston comes out to cut a promo on Jon Moxley, because it was announced earlier today that Lance Archer was not showing up for Dynamite. He had been in contact with people who had tested positive for COVID. So good on him, and good on AEW for keeping him far, far away, despite the fact that I had to change the plans, moving away from the six-man tag main event that they had between Team Taz and Jon Moxley, Will Hobbs, and Darby Allin. Kingston comes out, and he kind of picks up he re-raises the energy with a great promo, of course. He says that he was never eliminated from the Casino Battle Royal. So he deserves his shot against John Moxley tonight. 18 years says that he deserves his shot. He says that he and John were cut from the same cloth, but John sold out and Kingston never did. Stayed with the Fighters and the Outlaws. Didn't sell his soul to the devil. Calls Mox out. Calls him the sports entertainer. And Mox comes out very happy to oblige. And all the officials come out to keep him apart. This was super effective, as they say in those Pokemon games.
No, I don't play Pokemon, but yes, this was super effective. It was a fantastic promo from Eddie Kingston. As soon as he came out and he was just full of piss and vinegar, I was like, right, yeah, this is going to be fun. And then he cut a promo that was... Normally, I don't like the WWE shots, but this worked really well, I think, for the storyline. It wasn't just a jab for the sake of making a jab, like Cody hitting a throne, okay?
But it wasn't a WWE jab. It was like a comment on Mox's career, right?
It was a 100... You've sold... I didn't sell my soul to the devil.
Mm-hmm.
That's a jab at WWE.
Come on. The whole thing... He's saying you sold out to this, to the devil. Sure, it's a jab. There's... Okay, maybe like a flick at WWE. Oh, but it was commentary on Moxley's career. Come on!
He literally called them the devil.
No, he called... He's talking about... Look, I like the shots. So you're barking up the wrong tree here.
I do too, but like those are obvious. He said Moxley sold his soul to the devil. Who is the devil in that argument if not Vince McMahon?
Oh, so it's a shot against Vince and not WWE. Okay, thank you for that, Alex. Well, please, okay. Louis.
I'm sorry. Is WWE anybody but Vince McMahon? Does Vince McMahon work for a different company? I'm sorry. It was a shot of the XFL.
I don't have their corporate structure right under my eyes right now, Alex. I can't speak on that right now. Louis, do continue.
So yes, these shots or not shots or shots, whatever we say they were, I normally find them a bit much and for the sake of it, but this was perfect. It really suited it. And I think that Eddie Kingston, for the second time, I think one of the WrestleTalk guys tweeted this, for the second time has successfully built up a title match with a 30-second promo.
Mm-hmm.
And done it very well. It was simple. It was effective. Eddie Kingston is legitimately one of the best promos in wrestling. And yeah, I was really into this. It picked me up after the lackluster opener, shall we say.
Anakin left us a super chat. Thank you again, Anakin, for the super chat. Says, Louis with the heel turn, you don't like Pokemon at all? Now, to be fair, I'm going to stick up for my boy Louis here. He didn't say he didn't like Pokemon. He says he doesn't play Pokemon. There's a world of difference there.
Yep. I have no issue with it.
There you go. Evan Wright left us a super chat as well. Thank you again, Evan. He says, I'd just like to point out the difference between Eddie Kingston promos and promos we hear on WWE TV. Think it's night and day. I was glued to my TV. Just like Louis said, he's one of the best promos in the business. And he speaks. The thing with him is that he speaks always very earnestly. It comes very, very much from a place of passion every time he goes for it. The promos that he cut when he was in NWA Power. It was the same thing. Every time he speaks, it becomes riveting because he pours himself into what he does. He could not thrive in WWE. He just, right now, he could not. Kenny Omega comes out to do commentary on the Adam Page versus Evil Uno match. Kenny says that this match was offered as a tag team match, first and foremost, the Dark Order versus Page and Omega. But he says, well, you know, it wouldn't have been a fresh match to begin with, which, you know, that's a shot at WWE right there. But he also...
But sorry, the devil was not.
I'm sorry if we have to actually like be very, very explicit and ram it down your throat, right? It's like, no mention of devils or, you know, the guys in Stamford and stuff like that. All right, cool. So it wasn't a shot at WWE. Fine! I get it.
I'm not saying it wasn't a shot. I'm saying it's interesting how you've focused on this being a shot and not Eddie Kingston saying, "You sold your soul."
I'm saying, oh my God. Kenny insists he's a singles wrestler regardless, right? But we get the match. I thought this was a fun match. Uno gets some offense in. Paige hits a pump handle overhead slam into a bridge by deadlifting Evil Uno. The boy may have lost some weight, but he's still a big man. Uno hits a side slam, Paige with his pescado. Back in the ring, Uno hides behind Rick Knox and sets, which allows a setup to for Uno to hit a neck breaker on Hangman Page. Uno drops Page onto the stage, and the Dark Order move in menacingly, but Uno sends everyone away. It's like, no, I want to do this on my own. It allows time for Page to recuperate. Slams Uno on the apron. Uno fights back, hits a top rope senton. They slug it out. Page with the running shooting star press, but Uno lifts his knees. He saw that one coming. But but Adam Page brings it all to an end with a powerbomb and the buckshot lariat. Gets the win. I mean, it's the... Adam Page is consistent. He's a workhorse. He puts on fun matches every week. This was no different.
Yeah, and the storytelling was exceptional with Kenny coming out, really putting the story over on commentary. You have Hangman clearly looking detached from the breakup. Yeah, this is fantastic. The storytelling of it was off the charts. So the match dragged, though. I wasn't that keen on, like, it was fun. Mm-hmm. It was fine, but it didn't really put Hangman over as one of the top singles wrestlers in the company. I guess you have the excuse of, he's not on his game because of everything that's gone on. But yeah,
he's a sad cowboy.
He is a very sad cowboy. But it probably wasn't wouldn't be the match I would have done and dragged, and that was very indicative of the first hour. It dragged a lot. This was the storytelling made up for it, because the storytelling was very good.
Evan Wright left us a super chat. Thank you very much, Evan. Again, he says, "I'm here for Adam Ishii hitting lariats everywhere." Yeah, yes, they do have that velocity about their strikes, don't they? Tony goes backstage, told Schiavone to interview the Young Bucks, you know, and he's sort of nervous as he knocks on the door because he doesn't want to get Alex Marvez'd. Instead, we get our boy Matt Jackson, who comes out, and he says that he hopes people sympathize with the Young Bucks, you know, despite super kicking Mike Posey and Alex Marvez. You know, they've had a rough run of things right now. Tony starts asking some questions about FTR. Matt takes offense to them, asking, "Where's your phone? Let me see your phone." Takes Tony's phone and smashes it against the door sill. Tony Schiavone is out of a smartphone, but nonetheless, the Matt just throws some money at him and says, "Go buy yourself a new one. It'll be fine." Look, I'm going to tell you that Matt Jackson as an insufferable prick is the best Matt Jackson. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. He's good, but there was a ball, and the ball was being held, and the ball has not been dropped, but the grip on the ball is slowly slipping.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not as into the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, Hangman Page stuff as I was pre All Out. We need to see a bit of progression now. Like,
I agree.
What has changed from this week to last week? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So this week, in terms of the Elite stuff, if someone would say to me, "Oh, listen, I couldn't catch Dynamite this week. What should I watch?" I wouldn't suggest any of the Elite, FTR, or Young Bucks and any of that stuff segments, because it was very much missable. Not missable, but nothing was progressed. It was perfectly fine television, but nothing progressed. Also, are we supposed to expect the EVPs of the company don't know who Alex Marvez is? I mean, they've said his name before. I get it was being a bit of a prick, but don't know why. That just got on my nerves. I found the segment was fine. As you say, prick Matt and Nick Jackson are very good, especially Matt Jackson. So yeah, I can get on board with seeing more of this, but hopefully next week with some added wrinkles to it, or an interaction with someone else, or just something more, something of substance.
Mm-hmm. Orange Cassidy challenged Brody Lee for the TNT title, and early on, Orange Cassidy gets under John Silver's skin as he tries to stomp on his denim jacket, but he's on top of that. And even Anna Jay tries to stick up for her boys, but instead she gets the aviators. But that doesn't keep Orange Cassidy from fighting Brody Lee, of course. He actually does the shin kicks this week. Had been a while. It was nice to see them back. And Lee stomps on one of Cassidy's feet and then slaps him across the face. Cassidy dives onto the Dark Order, but they catch him, which then allows Brody Lee to do a dive onto everyone. And everyone, of course, crashes. And what I thought was fantastic here was the members of the Dark Order were all on their backs selling the splash, but they were all still applauding their exalted one for the fantastic move he just did. I thought that was hilarious. Cassidy's been taking a beating. He can't stand up on his feet, so Lee can't hit the discus lariat. Or is it because he's spent? No. He mounts a comeback, diving elbows to the floor, avoids some offense from the Dark Order. Brody Lee blocks the tornado DDT, but Cassidy hits a stunner instead. Brody hulks up after eating some chest kicks, and finally the tornado DDT hits. There's an air raid crash, but it doesn't get it done. Silver distracts. There's a powerbomb by Brody Lee, followed by the discus lariat, and he gets the pin on Orange Cassidy. Before we get to the post-match stuff, what did you think of this match, Louis?
It dragged. So, here's my problem. Orange Cassidy is wrestling far too much for me. This is not why he got over.
Mm-hmm.
No one went into... when Orange Cassidy was really over and was like, you know what I love about Orange Cassidy? His wrestling. And that's nothing against his wrestling, because his wrestling is great. But the great thing about him was he didn't care. He wasn't wrestling every week. It was kept to short segments. And I think AEW's gone, he does well in the numbers. Let's put him on every week. And for me, it's losing its charm. So if you see something every single week, it's not special. And now he's just another guy on the card.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So for me, he's wrestling far too much, and this match did him no favors. Neither did it for Brody Lee. But I mean, coming out of it, as you'll get onto, I was thinking about very much the post match, and Cassidy did kind of feel like an afterthought. Which, bearing in mind the return we got, I'm not surprised.
Well, let's talk about that. The lights go out after the match, and I'm conditioned at this point. It's Retribution. Was it Slapjack that came out? Mace?
T-Bone Steak?
Dreadlocks Joe? No! It was Cody Rhodes! Came out sporting black hair, no more blonde, and he just dominates the Dark Order. He just lays everyone out. There's Cody Cutters, and he figure fours five, Louis. He figure fours five. Am I the only one who picked up on that? Anyway, Cody Rhodes is back. Big return. Clearly wants to make a statement. After the match, we get a segment where Brody Lee is mad as hell. He says, what kind of man? He challenges Cody's manhood, right? Says, what kind of man lets his woman post Instagram thirst traps and call me daddy? Like, we're getting into some territory here. He calls him a coward, pulls out a dog collar, and says that he's ready to wrap this around his godforsaken tattoo. Looks, okay, there's Cody, big return, it's big news, coming back for his title. It smells like a dog collar match. I am all for this, Louis. This was good.
With the Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin feud of last year, I want no feud focused around being focused around dogs or dog collars
or any animals for that matter. I'm fine with keeping my animals away from the wrestling. But no, I mean, the return was great. Great to see Cody back. Felt like he's been gone longer than a month, so it was great to see him back, and he injected some life into the show. And Brody Lee's promo, damn, what a promo after commercial break. Mm-hmm. That thirst trap line was brilliant. I thought the whole promo, yeah, it was just a very good promo. Good stuff.
It was good stuff. We're glad to see Cody back. Evan Wright left us a super chat. Thank you, Evan. Says, John Silver is a national treasure. Big fan of him. But I really think, and I agree, I like him too, but I think BTE, I think the people who are really into John Silver are people who watch BTE. That's where the magic happens. Because if you just watch him on TV, you'd be like, what is this guy's big deal? Abhinav Tirumala.
Oh, but he is a brilliant wrestler.
Oh, you know, for sure.
Don't get that. And that, I think, they started as a comedy act, but I could see Silver and Reynolds being a great team in the division because they're fantastically entertaining, particularly Silver. And in the ring, they're just very, very good as well.
I think Silver is immensely talented. I'm just talking about what they're doing, like, you know.
Of course. Of course.
On Dynamite as such. You know, they're mostly enhancement talent. Abhinav Tirumala left us a super chat. Thank you very much. Says, does Cody have the best entrance in AEW? Yes.
He has. No. He definitely has the most entrance in AEW. Also, I will say, him coming back with the dark hair is a really cool, and like it signifies, oh, this is somebody different now. Like, it's not the same Cody you saw before. It's a different guy. Also, I appreciated the homage to Charlotte Flair with the half-ass figure eight. Like, it was a figure six.
Matt Hardy and Private Party come out. Hardy is selling his knee injury. It's his birthday. Happy birthday, Matt. We hope you had a good one. So basically, he establishes the fact that he was attacked by someone, doesn't know who that person was. He lays out some suspects. He had a confrontation with MJF. He had a talk about the TNT Championship with Brody Lee. And of course, he has his issues with the Inner Circle. And he thinks Jericho is the prime suspect. So that brings Jericho out to basically say, you know me better than that. I would never do that. Oh, by the way, Sammy Guevara is fine. Of course. Matt gets frustrated. There's some...
Because Sammy Guevara was the one we were worried about after that match.
So basically you have Chris Jericho saying, you know, Matt, you know me better than that. I never did this. Private Party sort of shared the microphone. It sets up a match next week with Chris Jericho versus Isaiah Cassidy. Louis, I'm really curious to get your thoughts on this segment right here.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I felt too, really.
I don't really know what to say. It's fine. I mean, the match next week will be good, but a great way to get Isaiah Cassidy over, which is fun. Like, Mark Quinn had his singles match with Cody, so I guess it's Isaiah Cassidy's turn to have a bit of a match against an established star, but. I don't get Matt Hardy. The broken gimmick is brilliant. If he's not doing it, he just feels like another guy on the roster.
Sure.
And I thought he was going. Not even the company. But didn't he cut a promo after All Out and say, like, oh, I'm going to be going away for a while. When I come back, I'll challenge for the titles. And he just hasn't come back. It's not me wishing him away. Just where's the sort of consistency? But yeah, if I had to sum this segment up, it would be serviceable.
Yeah, I think as much. And, you know, as much as I appreciate Chris Jericho working with the younger talent and putting him over, putting them, not necessarily putting them over, but working with them, giving them some shine. Cassidy versus Jericho next week is not necessarily a selling point for me, but that's just me. Oh. Early thoughts. Who's the mystery attacker? Who took out Matt Hardy, Louis? Since we're having a whodunit now.
Chris Jericho.
Well, apparently we're not so sure now.
Because we believe Chris Jericho now, do we?
Here, I think it's Private Party. That's my twist right there. Well, we'll see.
Fair enough.
Oh, what a twist!
FTR come out next with a promo segment of their own with Tully. Basically, Tully here in this promo says, how do you get your tag team champions on TV more often? You get rid of the 60-minute time limit rule and you make it 20 minutes. A 20-minute brush with greatness is what they're calling it. Next week, they're going to be fighting SCU. And then after, they were wondering who's going to be their challengers after that. And they said, you know, Best Friends had an impressive win last week, but that was a glorified backyard match. Trent and Chucky come out, of course, and they say they want the match right now. They want the 20-minute match right now. FTR seemed to agree with it until Cash says, we can't do it fairly with you guys. You're not 100%. Take a week off. We'll see you soon. We can't do it tonight. The Best Friends hug. I didn't know what they're doing. Like, I like the idea of, the 20-minute match for TV. But the tag champions were already having 20-minute tag. We're already having tag matches on TV, you know, despite the 60-minute rule. I don't know. I don't quite get that. I'm looking forward to Best Friends versus FTR. I think it's going to be real good. But, Louis, I don't think they're doing FTR any favors with these segments week after week. I don't think they're connecting.
Again, it was fine.
It was fine.
There was nothing offensive. There was nothing bad. There was nothing that made me go, there was nothing that was damaging. It was just fine. And I mean, at least we did get some progression with this, with the Best Friends feud. But the money's in the Young Bucks feud. Coming out of All Out, it was like, all right, let's see where the Young Bucks goes with this. And since then, we've had no character progression, sure. No storyline progression with them and the Bucks and Kenny and blah, 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 blah. I mean, we haven't seen them and the Hangman interact in weeks. It would be nice to sort of reignite that. But, this was once again, as I said earlier, just a fine segment.
Next, we had Thunder Rosa and Hikaru Shida versus Eva Lys and Diamante. Eva Lys and Diamante attack before the bell, and they go right to work on Shida, but Shida strikes back. Thunder Rosa hits a missile dropkick. There's some cool double-team offense by the babyfaces, and even at some point, Shida suplexes Eva Lys into Diamante, who's against the bottom turnbuckles, which was really cool, followed by Meteora by Rosa. Diamante goes for or at least sets up to do a code red, but Thunder Rosa breaks it up with a Death Valley driver, and Shida hits the Falcon Arrow, but Eva Lys breaks up the pin. Finally, it's the running knee by Shida who will get the pin here, because her knees are completely and totally lethal. I thought this was pretty good. I thought it was, of course, a step up from what happened last week. I don't think anyone was... I think everyone was on a much more level playing field here. What did you think about the match, Louis?
Yeah, it was, again, as we said last week, long women's match on Dynamite, which is great. Mm-hmm. Women given time, which is great. A story going into it, which is great. So no complaints on that end. The action was good. Thunder Rosa is fantastic. I think they're going to build to a match between her and Hikaru Shida at the anniversary show, potentially for the NWA women's title, so Thunder Rosa can get her win back, and then maybe a unification match or a title versus title match later down the line.
I'm glad they're not done with it, personally.
No, me too. I mean, while the women's division is does make you think, what was that thing with Nyla Rose a couple of weeks ago where Sheeta and Rose seemingly started a feud? That just seems random. But I'm happy that we're going to get more Rosa and Sheeta. Maybe potentially AW and NWA hadn't worked things out yet. And then now that they have and they've got Thunder Rosa back sort of on a more regular basis, they can sort things out. But yeah, I was happy to see this. And Thunder Rosa is fantastic. So thumbs up.
John Moxley successfully defended the AEW World's Championship against Eddie Kingston. I like this match because it was two guys who just wanted to beat the tar out of each other. And that's exactly what we got. And I was in for it. They started slapping each other. The chops that they were delivering on each other at the start were absolutely brutal, but also fantastic. Until Mox clotheslines Kingston down. They brawl onto the floor. Kingston dumps the timekeeper's table on Mox. Mox suplexes Kingston on the floor. They fight over the barricades. Back in the ring, they start chopping on each other some more. Mox dives to the floor, suplexes Kingston on the floor again. Kingston powerbombs Mox off the top, off the turnbuckle, and Mox avoids the pin by a smidge. Kingston hits a pair of backdrop drivers and gets another really close pinfall. Moxley gets the sleeper hold locked in and into the bulldog choke, and Kingston passes out. And that was your match. After the match, the Lucha Brothers come out and start beating down on Moxley. Will Hobbs is not gone yet. He comes out to try and save. Darby Allin comes out as well, but that draws out Ricky Starks, who spears Darby Allin into next week, and the heels are just beating the holy hell out of everyone. You know what? I like this. Maybe wasn't the greatest AEW main event, but this was exactly my speed. I like the finishing angle. Let me know what you think about all of this, Louis.
Yeah, great match, hard hitting. What you'd expect from Ambrose, Moxley and Kingston. Yeah, definitely not Ambrose.
A shot at WWE that you just took there, or is it a shot at his career? Like, I'd like to know.
It's a shot at it being 4:37 a.m. and I am ready for bed. But no, it was a great match, hard hitting. It was great to see Eddie Kingston in a world title match on national TV. Fully deserved. They built this up over a week. I'd like to see what they could do over four heading into a pay-per-view or a Dynamite. So that was great. Yeah, good stuff. And the match made sense. It wasn't a title match for the sake of it. He wasn't eliminated from the Battle Royal. He'd been saying it before. I guess it was kind of fortunate for AEW that with Lance out, they had a world title match to promote. While not artificially forcing it in, it made sense, which worked for me. The match was good. The closing sequence by not having Eddie Kingston pass out was great. But as I said, with the Brian Cage and the Brody Lee, only so much of these, I'm not going to tap out, but I don't win the match. I either pass out or someone throws in the towel. Once they happen a lot, and they've happened in three of Moxley's last five title defenses, once they happen a lot, they do lose their appeal and their speciality. So having this, would this have worked better and been more emphatic if he hadn't done the same thing to Archer and to Cage and Brody Lee? 100%. But I guess each time they've had a reason to do it. But yeah, this was good. And then the post-match was great. The heels getting the win. I'm not sure what it's leading to, but maybe a massive match. Who knows? But Will Hobbs is spine buster. That's all I thought about.
Crazy.
Damn, that man can hit a spine buster. I think you spoke about Fabian Eichner's. I haven't caught it yet, but I bet it was nowhere near as good as Will Hobbs is, because Will Hobbs just great. And it was great to see him still in the main event, even though his match was cancelled. Did feel bad for him, obviously. For the others, they'll get opportunities like this, and they've had them before. But for Will Hobbs, it was his first on the real main event scene. So it was a shame for him, but still great to see him.
Hope he kept him in there.
Pushed to this level.
I agree.
So yeah, it was a good ending to what was a fine show. Definitely the not as good as last week. I think AEW, you've got this weird trend where the live shows aren't great. They're very good. They're good TV. They're not Raw bad.
No.
But they're not AEW high standards. And then the tape shows are often significantly better. So I'm looking forward to seeing the tape show next week. And that should be good.
Eloquent left us a super chat. Thank you very much, Eloquent. Says, Eddie Kingston chops greater than. And then there's nothing. You see what that means? You see, but they were fantastic. Evan Wright left us another super chat. Thank you, Evan. Says, Thunder Rosa tribute to Animal with her face paint. Yeah, that's right. It was a nice little touch there. And that's how we're going to wrap it up this week. We're going to wrap it up with one last super chat, actually, from Donovan Dijak Can't Eat Pie. Thank you very much. Leaving a super chat saying, as usual, you three are very good in Regal face. It was just very good. I guess that's how it should be delivered. So thank you everyone for watching. Louis, what do you got? What do you got coming up? Where can people follow you on social media and stuff?
At the Louis Dangor. I had an interview go up today on the Wrestle 2 channel with Matt Sydal. He talked about his AEW debut, the Shooting Star Press botch. He spoke about turning down a WWE return. He spoke about the Ring of Honor Pure Title tournaments. There was a lot of good stuff in there. And I've got an exclusive coming tomorrow that's all I'll say. I've got an exclusive coming tomorrow, which I'll share on my Twitter. So head on over and check that one out. But thanks for having me, guys. Thank you for your not setting this stream live before we were due. And thank you for sharing this stream with the Quizzlemania champion.
Well, you're very welcome, Nugs. Not a problem. Alex, what have you got cooking for us this week?
Oh, I just love pie. I would love to eat some pie. Oh, let me tuck into this nice pie. Oh, I can't eat the pie because of my mask. Oh, no.
That's my impression of that guy's name on the chat. Which is hilarious. Follow me on the Twitter at Alex Sour Graps. I got a special edition of Sour Graps coming to you tomorrow night, which is a full Q&A session. I've seen a lot of the Qs. They're going to have some interesting A's, let me tell you.
Oh, that's fantastic. So be sure to follow Alex on Twitter as well at Alex Sour Graps, and subscribe to Fightful Select if you want to see all of these great reviews and the Q&A session and all that stuff coming up. There's a lot of good stuff there. Great way to show support for Fightful. And hey, if you want to, at the same time, head on over to youtube.com/MrWarrenHayes and subscribe to my own YouTube channel. I do stuff there as well. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening, and we'll see you next time.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.